Good morning and welcome to the Philadelphia United Lodge of Theosophists. As most of us are well aware, the Lodge operates on the basis of universal principles as stated on the back of the periodical, the Declaration. It is basically a statement of independent devotion. Each lodge, no matter where in the world it is situated, and you will see the listing there of the various lodges, no matter what language it is conducted upon or in, or whatever the word should be, the fact is that each lodge is independent, determines for itself what of the teachings it will use and when it will have its meetings and how they will be conducted. It is independent devotion. It equally falls to each individual to be independently devoted. There are no officers, bylaws, constitution, rules, no fees or dues. Each decides for themselves how they will participate, what they will do in service of these ideas. No one determines it for anyone. It is self-determination. The only truly fundamental rule within the group is the acceptance of universal brotherhood, that we are all one with all life, and therefore there can be no separation. The truths that unite us are the aim, purpose, and teachings of Theosophy. And it is that we give out here. Here in Philadelphia, we have two weekly meetings and one monthly meeting. This Sunday morning one from 11 to 12. And our subject for the entire month of June is Practical Theosophy. And the interesting thing is, this Sunday, next Sunday, and the last Sunday in June are all on the same idea. This morning we have the dual power of imagination. Next Sunday, applying correspondence and analogy. And the last Sunday, thinking with the higher mind. They are really all three one subject, with three different approaches. On Wednesday evenings, we have a reference library that is open from 5:30 to 7:30, and a study class in the Ocean of Theosophy that begins at 7:45 and lasts till 9. We are in the last chapter of the Ocean, focusing on psychic forces and phenomena. That sounds like we're going to have psychic forces and phenomena, but we're not. We are studying about it, that we may understand what we hear from others' experience or understand some experience we may have ourselves. The monthly meeting is a Friday evening one, the third Friday of the month, where we take a particular religious or philosophical idea and show that it is a common teaching to all. It is a fundamental truth that is expressed, no matter how colored or altered by the culture that gave birth to it. This Friday, the 17th, the subject is Jainism, the path of virtue. The work done here or at any United Lodge is done on the basis of voluntary donations. And a dollar given in the right spirit is worth a fortune. And of course, it takes money to keep this building open. We remind you that the April and May Theosophical Independence, which is produced here in-house, is available behind the usher's chair, and also that one of our artistic students, and those of us who are not artistic are always in awe of such things. One of our artistic students has produced a little postcard that tells people where we are and just briefly what we're about. They are on the usher's table. We have many. So grab a handful, if you will, and leave them maybe at the library or the supermarket or wherever, just so people get the chance to realize that we are here and we offer free meetings. We did just want to ask, in line with this subject, just for a moment, imagine if you didn't have theosophy in your life. Remember what it was like when you were looking and questioning. Now, maybe it was only one particular thing, one idea or question that brought you here and obviously has satisfied you. But for many of us, it is a hope for humanity that the effort that we put forward, as humble as it is, does affect the imagination of humanity. So on that basis, we will have a talk presented on the dual power of imagination, and then your questions are invited.
The dual power of imagination. Pythagoras, the Greek philosopher, said of imagination, "It is the great spring of human activity and the principal source of human improvement. Destroy the faculty, and the condition of men will become as stationary as that of brutes." Imagination is a power that has ridden the cyclic roller coaster, and sometimes it has been judged as fancy, like some sort of daydream that children would indulge themselves in. Other times have found it described as the handmaiden of genius. During our lifetime, we have witnessed an upturn in respect for what has been called the king faculty, thanks in no small part to the light of theosophy. The study of theosophy reveals the true powers and meanings beneath the words we casually use. We can see that imagination is a powerful tool in the possession of humanity, but the key word in that sentence is tool. We know by casual observation and experience that tools are neutral, neither positive nor negative, good or evil. It is the intentions and motivation of the user that makes a fire a bringer of heat and comfort or a fierce and dreadful weapon. So what do we know of humanity, the possessor of this most powerful tool? Well, the great souls, both ancient and modern, that dwell under the banner of theosophy tell us, and testing and checking can verify, that humanity has a dual nature, commonly referred to as man's upper and lower natures. Many theosophical books and pamphlets in the lobby behind this room go into great detail about man's divided nature. But for our talk today, we need only to know that this is where blessings and curses dwell. HPB says to us, regarding the influence of our dual nature on the imagination, why is it that one person sees poetry in a cabbage or a pig with the little ones, while another perceives in the loftiest things only the lowest and most material aspect, and will laugh at the music of the spheres and ridicule the most sublime conceptions and philosophies? The difference depends simply on the innate power of the mind to think on a higher or lower plane. attached to and guided by the senses only, imagination's true power cannot find the proper outlet and potential. Because its sense-based attachment interferes with its labor of controlling, purifying, and raising its possessor's thoughts and aims. His thoughts are chained to the inclination of his senses only, causing impulsive speech and actions, breeding moods of doubt, laziness, and selfishness, and a retardation of growth sets in. In Isis Unveiled, imagination is referred to as the plastic or creative power of the soul. And in the Ocean of Theosophy, it is called the master power and described as one of the noblest faculties in man. In its proper place, it is the tool of Manas, the thinker, aided by Buddhi. Just as our present forms evolve with the use of imagination, the godlike nature that resides in us can and will also evolve to full blossom from within with the proper use of the tool imagination. Perhaps the most powerful task the Theosophy performs for a sleeping humanity is to free man from the illusion of non-choice and prove that man need no longer be a slave to lower appetites, urges, and addictions. By rightly using imagination, humanity can lift its desired nature and reshape the personalities of individuals, families, tribes, and even nations. Right imagination enables man to trace every deed to its archetypal soul. The common task of waking, sleeping, eating and exercising, bathing and dressing, talking and listening are not mundane. They are related to our celestial souls. Bathing becomes sacred bathing or baptism. Wearing clothes of the right morality ultimately leads to donning our robes of glory. Spending our days performing sacred duties instead of meaningless tasks, we grow and our faculty of imagination grows stronger, lifting humanity from an animal existence to the realm of gods. So far in our history, we have used our imagination to split the atom, visit the moon, construct weapons that would make men the merciless green with envy, build 72-inch flat television screens, and make scrap protein taste like chicken. But the true work and noble work of imagination is to introduce who we are to who we can become.
You know, there is much that we study in Theosophy that is over our heads. It's like rock climbing, if not mountain climbing, and we do have to work and struggle at it. But of course it has its rewards. You can feel your mind stretching and your vocabulary increasing. And if you really practice at it, your sympathy growing. But a subject like this is so fundamental to our nature. There probably is not one human being above the age of, let's say, 2, that doesn't know a great deal about imagination. But what happens to most of us in growing up is that imagination is criticized or stifled or buried in order to conform to someone we either look up to or are perhaps afraid of. As the daughter of an artist, I was never allowed to use a coloring book because that would stifle your imagination. You had to draw your own pictures. Therefore, I had no pictures to color. Imagination is a wonderful thing, but it is to each individual their privilege, their prerogative, their use, and we haven't been using it healthily as adults. And that's why our title is The Dual Power of Imagination. So your questions are invited. Yes.
It was mentioned in referring to higher and lower nature, or higher and lower mind, blessings and curses, which we found interesting. Are there any such thing as blessings and curses? And if not, how is it that we perceive them?
Are there such things? Well, I ask anyone who wakes up in a bad mood, is there such a thing as cursing? Absolutely. You not only curse your day awakening and responding to that lower feeling, you poison the very atmosphere around you. We don't use our imagination often to realize that everything is alive. Everything, the air is alive and carries with it, as we know, odors and pollutants and all kinds of things. But it also carries ideas and feelings one to another. So you not only curse yourself, you curse the air in the room in which you are expressing this, even if it's not out loud. You are cursing the walls, the ceiling, the floor, the furniture, and then you dare to leave that room and provide it to the rest of the world. Of course there are curses, but they are self-induced. What about blessings? What about them? Do we ever bless things? Yes.
We can observe the idea of blessings just by being in the presence of someone who is uplifted, someone who is enjoying life, a counter girl working at one of the fast food places gives you a smile and genuinely makes you feel as though what you have to say to her is important.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes the whole meal from something that you put in your face to something that actually nourishes you. So yes, blessings are true. And we take them and give them.
And that smile comes from a place inside that soul. It's not superficial. That's why it's magical. But taking it to the food that you mentioned, we curse or bless the people we feed. Our feeling in the preparation of whatever it is, and it could be a reasonable bad mood. We could say, I have a perfectly good reason for feeling this way. But the fact is, we do harm with feelings like that. They are not natural to the soul. The soul should take the lesson and then move away from the negativity, because whatever we are feeling is in that food and is fed to the person who takes it. Think about that when you go out to dinner so easily. Maybe you want to inspect the way the help is treated, or the way the building is maintained. You want a sense of what is the feeling in this place, because I will ingest and digest that as well. But there are other blessings. What are they? Yes?
Well, using our imagination.
Oh, good idea.
To see any event as an opportunity to learn and grow is a blessing.
Mm-hmm. And it's a blessing to those around us. You cannot have a feeling inside you of energy, expectation, delight without passing it on. As was said, just being around certain people. We look forward to seeing certain people because we know that in their hearts, even if they're having problems, we will feel something real. We wanted to say one other thing about blessings. It can be speechless. We think one of the finest blessings we ever had in our life was right here in this room when we were in such a funk. We didn't know if we wanted to live or die or what. We thought, beyond hope. And an older student walking up to come and sit and give a lecture, as he walked by, he put his hand on my shoulder and squeezed. I've never gotten over it. It was like, I don't know, an energy boost, I'm with you, an affection. If we can give that to each other, stir hope within each other, what a blessing for us as well as the other. Yes?
Well, by being compassionate, to have passion for all that lives and suffers and breathes, we are broadcasting blessings, really, all the time. If we can...
Or
if we're not compassionate, then we're doing the opposite.
Yes, we usually bounce back and forth between self-centered and wanting to not be self-centered. And that is the why of study. We have to discipline the mind, because in our culture and civilization, the tendency is to slide into the lower, the personal, the sensual, the selfish. You know what we often forget, though? When we eat a rich or wonderful meal, we need time to assimilate it. When you ingest, you need to digest. That's a number one rule, and we all know it. We also need to hydrate the body constantly. It needs that water to perform its functions. But we don't do that with the mind. We need to allow time for the mind to digest, to assimilate. So if we've worked hard at something or studied hard at something, we need to take an equal amount of time to enjoy nature or music or to do something creative that uses our mind in a different way. That allows it, the mind, to digest and assimilate what we've taken in. Equally, the hydration. What do you think might be an analogy for that? Although that's cheating on next week. What would be an analogy for the water of our body is to what for the mind? Yes. You're still thinking.
Yeah, I was thinking this sounds like the Miller analogies test. But
well, I've never taken it, but
it's fun. It's fun. Anybody can take it. It's just a test. You could get it online if you want to. The water of our body is, it's like nourishment. It's food.
Okay.
It's sunshine.
We have, yes.
Stream of consciousness.
Ah, stream of consciousness, yes.
We were going to say similar thoughts and feelings.
Thoughts and feelings. Well, what does water do for the body? It replenishes what's been used in other processes. It's a feeding of the body. What feeds the mind? Ideas. So if you've been dealing with very difficult, lofty ideas, you use your imagination and deal with perfectly practical, useful ideas. Go watch nature. Go absorb the beauty in life around you. Hydrate yourself with a stream of consciousness that is different. We're so wealthy and we don't even know it. Yes?
Well, we're often told that the first principle of theosophy is the oneness of love, and that space is the container, or the representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're often asked to consider space and to let our mind try to find the end of space or expand into space. That seems rather a daunting task to hold in mind to that.
Well, it's impossible. That's why it's daunting.
But what does it do for us to do that?
Ah, we would ask, what does it do for the body to stretch or to reach for something just beyond your reach? Who was it that wrote, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, else what's a heaven for? We think it was a Scotsman, but we don't remember which one. To take that first fundamental principle that underlies all of life, which theosophy names deity for us, so we won't think God a being. Deity, a principle, a universal, changeless principle. We cannot, in our finite minds, conceive of the infinite. And yet, we all have an infinite concept at all times. What is space? Well, it's between you and me. But it's also in me, and it's in you, and it's over there, and it's up there. And where does it end? If we stretch our minds using our imagination to the furthest point, we cannot find the end of space. We cannot find the beginning of space. Deity is no less than space. The other magical part of this realization is if you take down the largest thing in space, there's no hole in space where it was. Space is unaffected by what is in it, and yet it contains all. And if that is something that you don't want to deal with, the other way to consider it is mathematics. Math starts from zero. Nothing, no thing, which is a description of deity. You can go in either direction. You can subtract or you can add, and you can do it to infinity. There is no end. There is the next number after that. So using either of those, you can imagine for yourself that universal principle. And next comes the realization where you really use your imagination. As Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, what should you do with all of this knowledge, all of this wisdom you're acquiring? He gives the direction for imagination. He says, act as if you were a spiritual being, because you are. And if you act as if it, you will begin to really realize it. Yes?
Well, it's interesting that when you go to different meetings, no matter what kind it is, work or public or whatever, there always seems to be somebody who, when things are trying to be solved, raises their hand, and they come up with this wonderful idea, thinking out of a box, and then, darn, I wish I had thought of that. So it's just kind of interesting that some people, their imagination is just so much freer to think of these things.
Well, before we get to that point, which is an excellent one, we would like to caution on the earlier point. Why on earth would anybody want to waste their time, mind, and imagination comparing themselves to anybody else? Why should you sit and wish, I wish I'd thought of that? That is absolutely pointless. Because if you could have thought of it, you would have thought of it. Instead, you should be looking, well, now what makes that person able to do that when I have all the facts in front of me as well? As was mentioned in the talk, there are those who, by birth, by nature, brought over from past lives, a way of thinking and approaching that is using the higher mind, seeing beauty in a cabbage or an onion, or in the most mundane, ordinary thing, they will see the higher processes of life. That's analogy again. The reason we don't do that is we're very focused on the rewards we want to get from the physical life. If you're valuing a cabbage while you're cutting it up, you're not thinking about the great things you could do at work tomorrow to get you a raise. So it's our desire, it's our appetite that allows us to use our mind in a certain way. Yes?
My question to the end of that.
I wouldn't let you end, would I?
So then we're looking at being checked by karma then, because some people, you know, it just, these ideas just pop out of their head like nothing. But you would think, though, karmically, people could be stunted, we would guess, by what they are physically able to do with their brain.
This is a very important subject. Checked by karma. We all tend to use that sort of looking backwards. We're checked by our karma. We can't have this, do this, be this because of things we did or didn't do in the past. We are ignoring the most important point in that law. Now, checked by karma, that's the past. What am I doing now? What can I do in spite of being checked by karma? Can I begin to practice the use of imagination? Can I make it my concern to be aware at all times as much as I can how I'm using my mind, where I place it, what ideas I go after? I may be checked by karma, but that has nothing to do with my power. I have the power of now. And even if I can't express it, I can use it to grow and alter and improve. Nothing can stop us. Nothing in this universe. Every problem we have, self-generated. Every solution or healing we come up with, self-generated. As a matter of fact, one of the most important things on this subject was stated by H.P. Blavatsky in an article called Raja Yoga. This paper doesn't work as easily as I thought. She says, this is all the secret. Now, if you're not familiar with theosophy, we are not given many statements like that. This is all the secret. Half, if not two-thirds, of our ailings and diseases are the fruit of our imagination and fears. Destroy the fears and give another bent to the imagination, and nature will do the rest. Checked by karma? I don't think so. That's like another problem to solve. We shouldn't let our past define our present. Yeah.
Well, we're very fortunate because we've been given a key to dispel and destroy and regenerate.
That sounds very masculine.
Well,
dispel and destroy.
Dispel and destroy. And that's what Shiva is. That's what Shiva's the regenerator, the destroyer, the regenerative power.
For the purpose of?
For the purpose of
recreation.
Yes. Creation, yes. Exactly. Creation, lifting up all life. It's conditioning, for the most part. It's a constant conditioning in school, in church, everywhere, mm-hmm. that we are poor, miserable sinners, we're defective, we need an outside source, which doesn't even exist. It's a boogeyman. And that's what we have to get beyond in order to be truly creative, and not just for ourselves, not just for a selfish purpose.
Well, the problem...
So we've been given a great key here.
But the problem isn't what we've been given from teachers, religion, whatever. The problem is we accept it.
It's not a gift.
It is a gift when you consider that you're a pliable little mind at some point, and we accept. I think probably everyone in this room challenged ideas along the way. Even if they couldn't go very far with the challenge, they just knew that ain't so. That's not right. The fact is, it's what we hold as a basis that will determine our behavior and our growth. And that is based on imagination. Here's what Einstein said. Imagination is more important than knowledge. For knowledge is limited to all we know and understand, while imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and understand. Yes?
So being checked by karma, in a sense, means we may not be able to use these spiritual powers in the direction we want to, because for whatever reason from the past, we don't have that facility in this lifetime. But in a sense, if we're focusing here, we're ignoring what it is we're here to do with these same spiritual powers that is available to us right this moment. So checked by karma is a tricky phrase because we don't want to use it as a reliever of responsibility, mm-hmm. in a sense. That power of imagination, like the power of sight, like the power of living, are spiritual powers that we do a disservice to by not using them, not putting them to the best.
Well, the problem is we are using them. There is nothing in the universe that isn't developed on the basis of spiritual powers. The worst thing we have ever done, the worst thing humanity has ever done, that's the only power there is, the power of spirit, of will and choice. But maybe instead of checked by karma, we should say, bad grade on my homework. Because if you really want to know something, a bad grade on your homework is not going to stop you. It's going to make you inquire, okay, what did I not understand about this problem? Why can't I apply myself to it? And even while we may feel a sense of frustration, we can begin to work at that problem. We knew a student here who was raised as an only child, as a serious violinist from like 6 years old. So everything in the family was catered to his needs. You know, it's like being a prince somewhere. And he came to Theosophy out of curiosity and then realized he needed to learn something that was fundamental to the rest of us. And that was brotherhood, sharing. And he pieced out through the philosophy all the things that would help him learn it, because HPB says you can learn brotherhood by practice. And he set out to practice it every day and then woke up one day and realized he didn't need to practice it anymore. It was like his violin. It was just natural to him. So the things that we don't have or that we can't do, we can make inroads, but the most important thing is here. We found a lot of wonderful quotes. Every impulse from above, every prompting of the divine within, should meet at once with a hearty welcome and response. If you feel as if something urged you to visit some sick, afflicted neighbor or a friend, obey the suggestion without delay. If the wish to turn over a new leaf comes into the lower consciousness, don't wait till next New Year's before actually turning it over. Turn it now. If some pathetic story of suffering has moved you, act on the emotion while your cheeks are still wet with tears. you know, St. Paul in the Corinthians talking about speaking in tongues and all of the other possibilities of spiritual things, talks about the supreme law of love and that it is not charity. It is a work of love. Now, why would that be so? If we wish to do something for another, why is it caritas, love, and not charity? Because we are the other. It's as simple as that. We all are one. If we feel moved, there is something between the two souls that needs settling in its own way. If we can help, we should help. Yes.
Well, with that statement, we're all one. In the Gita, one of the chapters describes a wise man.
I'm sorry?
Describes a wise man. A moon, they call him a moon.
Mm-hmm.
By reading that, the Theosophy talks about there are those perfected beings, those that have gone long before us and really are our guardians or our helpers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's said that we need to imagine them as our higher self or within us,
mm-hmm.
and keeping that alive. So, in that sense, by imagining their presence amongst us, within us, does that actually create that power?
By imagining the higher beings within us, does that create that power? Well, first, and we haven't stated it, the teachings of Theosophy come from those elder brothers of humanity who have not just in eons past, but in current historical times, kept records and provided materials to humanity to recognize its own spiritual nature. Now, we are told that the higher nature of every one of us is identical to the highest being you can imagine. We are not in contact with that higher nature except sporadically, maybe in meditation, maybe we bring something back from the deep sleep state, but it's like there's a country between us and a language that separates us. So when we use our imagination about those higher beings, about their residency inside our own nature, yes, of course, we build a path to that realization. It is a truth. We're not lying to ourselves. Imagination is not a lie. Indeed, here's a remarkable statement. We might think we'd be able to imagine something that could not exist. The plastic power of the imagination is much stronger in some persons than others. The rays of thought have the same potentiality for producing forms in the astral atmosphere as the sun rays have with regard to a lens. Every thought so evolved with energy from the brain creates a shape, even if it's only a shape on the mental plane. Occultism teaches that no form can be given to anything, either by nature or by man, whose ideal type does not already exist on the subjective plane. So we're talking about universal mind. We are all rays of universal mind. More than this, no such form or shape can possibly enter man's consciousness or evolve in his imagination, which does not exist in prototype, at least as an approximation. So when we are imagining, we are creating, but we are creating on the basis of something that is real. Yes?
So then, if we're talking about will and desire, we know that it must fit in with imagination,
mm-hmm.
somewhere. So it's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? So does imagination...
Theosophy would answer the idea, which came first, the chicken or the egg, the idea.
Okay. So where does imagination fit? Is imagination the impetus behind will and desire, or do you have to have the desire first to do something?
Oh, you play fun games, I can tell. Imagination. Use your imagination. I think you'll figure it out. Pythagoras said, imagination is the remembrance of precedent spiritual, mental, and physical states. In other words, it's really memory. We are remembering something. One of the strongest elements in human nature, the great spring of human activity. Animals have imagination, and Theosophy says that members of the vegetable kingdom have an instinct and rudimentary imagination. So imagination comes from the mind, thought, will, feeling, memory, imagination. But they all depend upon the user of them. We're back to tools. They are tools. A tool is impersonal. It is how we use the tool. So one individual can use imagination in such a way that they sour their own life and the life of everyone around them. And someone else with absolutely no physical health, no money, no success, no power, can use their imagination in such a way to bless everyone around them. It's funny, we call such people in nature a green thumb. I wonder what we would call them when we look at them in dealing with their fellow men. Yes?
Well, when we look at imagination, just look at the world. It comes from the Latin imago, it's the image.
To make an image.
What's first is the image. The image, it could be a visual image, a sound image. But that is what brings up the imagination.
Well, actually, it's that's what creates the image.
Exactly.
It is a circle. You can't avoid it. One of the things that perhaps we should do, besides looking at the world, because I don't know about the rest of you, but I am fighting my ostrich tendencies. I find that I want to avoid news, avoid unpleasant things. It's as though, okay, enough already, I can't take anymore. But we can't do that. That's not the way it should be either. So you have to find a news source you can trust, something that is impeccable, so that you're getting the truth of things, hopefully. But the fact is, one of the things we should be looking at every day is, how do I use my imagination? If a friend has called and they're having trouble and they hang up and we go, oh dear, what are they going to do? Isn't that awful? This is just, you have to stop yourself and say, wait a minute. That other is a soul with power, the same powers that I have, the same powers the Buddha has. Peace. Imagine, if you're going to imagine anything, imagine success and health and satisfaction and the freedom to make the right choice. You have to watch yourself and take notes and then try to find out, well, why do I do that in this situation? Why do I head for gloom and doom? Yeah, maybe that's the story of my life, but maybe it wouldn't have been if I didn't always do that, if I added a little color and a little hydration. Yes?
And that is also where we can help others with your case, that, you know, somebody calls up and pours out all their woes. And what can we do to help? We can help on the mental level by sending very good thoughts, sending, imagining what that person's life could
be.
And helping them on the mental plane.
The other thing, we think that theosophists tend to neglect, not forget, but neglect, is sympathy. Somebody comes to you with a horrible experience, you don't immediately talk to them about karma and about their future life and what debt they might be paying. You use sympathy first. I am so sorry that you're going through this, because after all, the personality that is standing in front of you didn't create the causes in a past life. We are mind beings, and as mind beings, we create the personality that we are going to use in order to experience on this plane. That personality has a new brain, new tendencies. Yes, we created them, but that personality is not responsible. So we can, from our own heart, express sympathy and then advice if we're asked for it. Yes.
Remember, we mentioned karma, but karma checks us, was the, I think, the quote. We need to keep in mind that karma is not personal.
No.
Karma is the universal law of harmony. So that if the harmony of the world is somehow disturbed, the law of karma attempts to balance things out. Now, it may not be that someone who has a terrible experience has created that, is responsible.
Right.
By
direct responsibility. Right.
Not directly responsible. There may just be collateral damage or something.
Well, HPB does say there's not a misshapen day or accident in our lives that doesn't come back to us, but it doesn't mean, as you say, that we directly did that. It could have been, and if we look at our lives, we often find this, it could have been that we could have helped and we stood back and did nothing. And therefore, when that balancing comes about, we will have a responsibility in it. You know, we are spiritual beings using spiritual powers, and they're very serious, sacred things. We should make a joy out of everything by using our imagination. As was mentioned in the talk, you're walking on the sidewalk. What are you doing? You're on a path. You're on a path going somewhere. For a purpose. That is the meaning of life to the soul. You are doing the dishes. What are you doing? You are bringing elements together that are magical. We defy you to look at soap and see the magic. Use your imagination. No, we're serious. If somebody gave you a bunch of hexagonal tiles, is that six-sided? And said, here, tile the room, but you have to start in the center. It has to come out perfectly. With the best imagination, you could not do it. It's impossible. If you've ever even tried to tile a room with square tiles, you know it's impossible. And yet, that is what soap does. Soap can start in the center, and creating those six-sided things create this perfect sphere. So even doing the dishes, you are bringing together the element of water and then of soap. Try to figure out, why does soap work? Why does it work? Wouldn't it make more sense to just scrub at the plate? Why does soap do all that magic? Because soap and dirt reject each other. It's like the opposite sides of a pole. So you put water and soap on dirt and it pulls away, doing your work for you. You cannot do anything on this physical plane without finding a joy in the imagination of what's going on. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All of the powers that are described are colorless. They have no particular direction. They have no affinity to one or the other. They are powers.
Yes, but think about this. The universe seeks harmony. The powers are colorless, but they seek light and union.
But we then color them by mm-hmm. our use of them, and by that we mean the karma that comes back to us, that we experience as a return, a result, is fingerprinted, colored, mm-hmm. labeled with us on it. It needs to be attended to by us. So with our use of every power, all of the effects that we are creating, yes, are opportunities, and we can imagine them as wonderful gateways to the next magical thing we'll understand. But the work is finding that which, and understanding it's ours, that which we have colored and brought back to ourselves as a lesson, and get busy in that coloring mm-hmm. book. Stay in the lines or stay out of the lines. Of drawing a straight line or balancing the color.
Well, one of the odd things that we do is a great use of our powers, and the Bhagavad Gita is the great lesson plan for beginning to overcome this, and that will be our Wednesday night subject for the summer. And if you can come, it is a wonderful series of classes every Wednesday night from the end of June through the end of September. What we do is we have this basket of labels. And this basket says, ooh, I like that. And this basket says, I don't like that. And we spend 3/4 probably of our life pulling out those labels and poking them on things. And therefore, when the don't like comes back, we get even more agitated and upset. Instead of accepting that either and both of those are our choices from the past, we're being offered what we asked for. And this is another way to use your imagination. Realize that the things you are looking for now in this life, the I want this and I want that and I will have this, are the things that nature will give you in the future. How you treat others is how you will be treated. How you handle a crisis is how you will be forced to handle a crisis. Nothing that you do is ever rejected. It is reused, it is recycled, and we have to learn to use it properly. So begin with the labels. Imagine yourself with those labels. And instead of saying, oh, I like this and I don't like that, just say, oh, this is mine. This is mine to deal with right here and right now. Let's see how I do. We wanted to end with this really simple statement. Every human mind is a ray of the soul. And in every incarnated existence, that mind carries within itself the seeds of wisdom. We are told we don't need anything but our own higher nature. We just don't turn to it. Imagine what your life and the life of those you care about would be if you began to turn to what is higher in yourself and in life. Meeting is adjourned.